This is Farms Food Future, a podcast that's good for you, good for the planet, and good for farmers. Brought to you by the International Fund for Agricultural Development. I'm Brian Thompson.
And co-presenting this edition, I'm Alison Lecce.
And this edition is our 40th podcast, although we look much younger. Anyway, we'll be focusing this time on IFAD's Indigenous Peoples Forum, which is coming up in February, with a theme of climate leadership and community-based solutions. Indigenous peoples are a necessary group in the fight against climate change, and yet they are critically underrepresented. In this episode, we travel around the world to talk to chefs, activists, and experts about the issues most important to their communities.
We chat with IFAD's very own Indigenous Peoples Specialist, Ilaria Firmian, and we also have a conversation with an Indigenous expert on free, prior, and informed consent.
We learn about Indigenous food systems from South Africa to the US, and we take a stop in South America to talk to a leader and activist who's fighting for land rights.
Later on in this episode, we hear from our Goodwill Ambassador, Sabrina Elba, who has an important message for us: adapt or starve. And we finish off this episode with a new segment in our Bangladesh Climate Change series.
Don't forget, we want to hear from you. What do you think about our stories, and who do you want us to be talking to? So please get in touch with us at podcast@ifad.org. You can subscribe to this podcast via your favourite podcast platform, and please rate us.
This is Farms Food Future. I'm Alison Lecce, and with me is Brian Thompson.
Music is an intrinsic part of Indigenous culture. It's used to tell stories, to express joy and celebration, to mourn. And each song reveals a little bit more about a culture. Before we jump into the rest of the episode, we're featuring a song that does just that. Created by Sawa Sudan for Development and Humanitarian Aid as part of one of their climate projects, the song is called Green Future for New Generation and is performed by the popular Sudanese band Egid El Galad.
The song Green Future for New Generation by Egid El Galad. The idea by Khalda Abu Zaid, the writer of the song by Abdulwahab Al Hallawi, and the song composer Sharif Sherhabil. The song is one of the activities of the project of Sudan Round Trees Initiative for Low Carbon Emissions, which is implemented by Sawa Sudan for Development and Humanitarian Aid, targeted indigenous people and local communities. The song produced by Egid El Galad musical group Popular Sudanese Music. Their musical composition call for giving voice to the neglected, disadvantaged, and those who are left behind. The main goal of the song is call for the conservation and protection of the forest for green future for new generation through sustainable use.
وبتقى بنور
Thank you to Khalda Abu Zaid from SAWA for that contribution. You can find out more at sawa-sudan.org. Up next, we take a closer look at what's happening on the EFAT side of things with our Indigenous Peoples expert, Ilaria.
This is Farms Food Future. I'm Brian Thompson here in the studio with Alison Lecce. Indigenous peoples play a crucial role in the conservation and management of natural resources. Despite this, their right to land and their own way of life is at stake.
Indigenous peoples make up nearly 21% of extreme poor in rural areas, and they are more than two times as likely to be in extreme poverty compared to non-Indigenous counterparts. I sat down with specialist Ilaria Fermian to learn more about what EFAT is doing to address these issues and protect these communities.
Well, Indigenous peoples are experiencing discrimination, exclusion, and cultural disintegration. And globally, in rural areas, they represent 20.8% of the extreme poor, and they are more than twice as likely to be in extreme poverty compared to their non-Indigenous counterparts. They also face food insecurity and malnutrition. And despite the fact that their rights to land, the territory, and the resources are recognized by the United Nations Declaration on Rights of Indigenous Peoples, they lack recognition of their collective rights. And this makes them more vulnerable to climate change, environmental degradation, and biodiversity loss. But in addition, they experience increasing challenges in the defense of these rights. And when they voice opposition to extractive industries in their territories, Indigenous peoples' rights defenders are killed. And approximately a third of the 350 or more human rights defenders killed in 2021 were Indigenous leaders.
One of EFAD's stocktake reports from 2021 found that Indigenous peoples were targeted in 62% of agroecology-related projects. How is your team planning to increase this targeting in the future?
Well, EFAD is now updating its policy on engagement with Indigenous peoples. The new policy will be brought to the executive board in December. And the policy has a time span of 10 years and builds on the basically, already for the 12th replenishment of EFAD resources, EFAD has committed to have at least 10 projects that have Indigenous peoples as a priority target group, but the policy aims at increasing and doubling this number of projects across the years. So this is definitely the idea of the policy is to make this increased target a commitment of EFAD across the next replenishment periods. And the new policy is, of course, an instrument to allow for this to happen. The policy is based on a number of principles of engagement that are the same as in the past policy, plus one which relates to food sovereignty and food and nutrition security. And beyond the principles of engagement, there are also a set of actions that are identified, both in terms of country programs, knowledge management, climate finance. So these are the instruments that should help for this targeting to increase.
The sixth cycle of the Indigenous Peoples Assistance Facility started a few months ago, I believe.
Yeah, the call was launched on the 9th of August and closed end of September.
Can you just tell me a bit about what this exactly is?
Yes, it's a funding instrument that Indigenous peoples' communities can use to find solutions to the challenges they face. Each cycle had a thematic focus, so this one is again on the climate biodiversity, but the overall approach of the facility is really to strengthen Indigenous peoples' communities and their organizations and foster self-driven development. So the IPAF is an instrument to support projects that are designed and that are implemented by Indigenous peoples' communities themselves. There are three regional organizations that support smaller organizations within the three regions, but the key aspect of IFPAF is really that the project builds on indigenous people's culture, identity, their knowledge, and the resources they have. So in the end, IFPAF is an instrument to implement IFAD's policy of engagement.
And so do you get like proposals for it?
Yes. Okay. We just closed the call, so I don't have information yet on the content of the proposals, but in terms of number, we got something like 660 proposals.
Oh, wow.
Which is huge, but the funding we have, which is again thanks to the SIDA Development Agency, we are able to fund probably 30 to 35 of this project. So even if not all of the 660 proposals are eligible, let's say that even only a portion of those is still, we are very short of funds, and we are actually looking into additional funding. Mm-hmm. Both internally through the IFAD grant program or with external donors to support all the proposals we have. Because these are, I mean, the beauty of IPAF is that they are really demand-driven proposals.
And now I have to ask, are there any specific projects that are happening or that are coming up that you are particularly like excited about or passionate about?
Maybe, I mean, there is one activity that we are implementing within the team, and which is supported by SIDA, a Swedish International Development Agency, and which is basically we are supporting the implementation of free, prior, and informed consent in a set of projects that are IFAD project, but where there is climate finance blended, so GCF, GEF. And this is a very interesting process that is happening in the sense that the most advanced case is Belize, where we had assigned FPIC already happened. The most exciting part of this is that we have indigenous experts joining the IFAD mission and really dealing with this part of consultations, helping organizing the consultation with indigenous communities and preparing the indigenous people's plan and the plan for FPIC. And we are already collecting lessons from that, including the fact that it's fundamental to have this consultation with indigenous peoples happening at the earliest stage possible, so that really their vision is integrated in the very beginning of the design stage.
Thanks to Ilaria Fermian for those comments. We'll return to Ilaria later in this episode to get a sneak peek of the forum in February. Up next, we sit down with an Indigenous leader and expert from Kenya who tells us about self-determined development.
This is Farms Food Future. I'm Alison Lecce here with Brian Thompson.
One of the most important aspects of working with Indigenous communities is ensuring that they have a voice in the projects that will directly affect them. While many organisations have guidelines to support consent in their work with Indigenous communities, IFAD is taking it a step further. It's the first international financial institution to adopt free, prior and informed consent as a criteria for project approval.
This consent ensures that Indigenous peoples are active agents in project development and implementation.
Kimaren Ole Riamit is part of the Maasai pastoralist community in southern Kenya. He's also the team leader of the organization Indigenous Livelihoods Enhancement Partners, which focuses on self-determination in development projects. Kimaren joined us all the way from the field where he's currently working on an FPIC project, to tell us a bit about the importance of this consent in development.
My understanding, my appreciation of free, prior and informed consent is that in engaging citizens, in engaging development actors, the history of this engagement has been problematic. These contexts are not neutral. There is power imbalance, there is knowledge imbalance, there is resource imbalance. FPIC is an instrument and an aspiration to try and respond to these historical pathways that are flawed and to try and make an attempt to create space to account and deal with these power imbalances by bringing those who have no power and have not had a voice to have a voice. And so it speaks about provisioning of full disclosure of issues under consideration so that the actors upon which the FPIC is applied can make informed choices, can question things from a point of information, and therefore can meaningfully engage and can meaningfully shape outputs based on the responses of the questions raised from a point of information of actors, particularly in our case, Indigenous people. They can make an informed choice to join the project, to reorganize the project, and therefore consent to being part and parcel of this development endeavor. So yes, it's an instrument to try and neutralize this power imbalance.
And now EFAD back in August released a report about FPIC. Why is this report and this consent so important to EFAD's mission, and how will it be implemented in EFAD's work?
That's a good question. EFAD is a unique agency. First, in the level at which it works, EFAD focuses at rural communities. EFAD also works around a very pertinent, food sovereignty, the right to food and survival. This is a space that Indigenous people occupy. And so for